Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined once again by Brandon Joe Williams, a creator of Contract Killer, a partner in Williams and Williams Law Firm, and character extraordinaire. I had Brandon back on the show to catch us up to speed on his 2.0 version of his Contract Killer course, which I cannot recommend highly enough. In this conversation, we go deep into the 14th Amendment, the replacement processes for revocation of election, the delineations between the single star passport, the five star passport, the function of novations, and then at the very, very end, we get into the differences between Scientology and Freemasonry. It was such a fun, juicy conversation. I'm so excited to share it with you. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to share this episode with at least three friends, because sharing is caring, and this is a more the merriest kind of tribe. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com so you can stay abreast of all the latest courses, webinars, books, live events, podcasts, etc., etc. That does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Brandon Joe Williams. Brandon Joe Williams, great to see you. How are you, my friend?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. It's been a minute since our last podcast, and I'm excited to catch up with you on the flip side of version one of your course, version two of your course, and then the addendums tossed in after version two.
Yeah. You've seen everything, or?
I'm halfway through version two. I finished version one when I saw stop doing this, do version two. I'm like, okay, efficiency isn't necessarily my path in this. So now I'm in the middle of version two, and there's so many switcheroos.
Yeah. I mean, the first course was just me kind of fumbling around as best I could. I'll just be honest, you know? So the second course is definitely more sharpened blade and better tools and more clear. And I think so. Yeah.
Cool. So let's start from the get-go, because I first dipped my toe into, back then it was called sovereign law conversation, around like 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. And then it was like crusty old dudes charging, you know, like tens of thousands of dollars. And you're the first one I know to put out such a comprehensive course for free. So what was the inspiration behind that?
Just looking at the country and thinking that it's going to shit. Because I launched the 1.0 course in 2022. So at that time, I thought, you know, boy, if this keeps going the way it's going, it's going to be, I'll be living in Venezuela here in about 3 years. That's what I was thinking, right? So I was just nervous about the future of the country, and I wanted to do something to effectively see if I can make a change in that area, because I didn't see this country lasting a whole lot longer at that time.
How are you feeling about our country in this moment?
Better, for sure. Better. You know, like, but it's still, there's still a ways to go. Like, for example, Trump is finding all this Social Security stuff. He's finding Social Security payments that are being paid out to people, quote unquote, that are 140 or 200 years old. But what he doesn't realize yet, is they aren't paying them out to people. They're paying them out to individuals, estates, partnerships, associations, companies, and corporations. So, yeah. That's kind of like the core part that we really have to drill down to. We can't just drill down to get close to that and not tap that. We have to actually go all the way down and tap that fully, in my opinion, if we want to have a truly new country, no matter what he does to salvage the country, no matter what he does to shut down all these different agencies and do all these different things, at the end of the day, if we don't get to the core of it, then it's just going to come back to haunt us again later. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
And for you, is the core of the 14th Amendment?
Yeah.
All right. Would you walk my audience through it, assuming not everyone watching this has taken your course? Tell us about the 14th Amendment.
Yeah. Can I do a screen share?
Yes, absolutely. Let me make sure you have a...
I just sent the request. Excellent. Yeah. So most people walking the earth believe, most people walking in this country, or shall we say countries, but we'll say country, believe they are a U.S. citizen, right? And the first thing that I go through with people on this is a California Supreme Court quote that I really like that gives kind of this whole situation in a simple, quick nutshell. This is Ellen R. Van Valkenburg versus Albert Brown, 43, Cal 43, from the California Supreme Court. It says, no white person born within the limits of the United States and subject to their jurisdiction, or born without those limits and subsequently naturalized under their laws, owes the status of citizenship to the recent amendments to the federal Constitution. The history and aim of the 14th Amendment is well known, and the purpose had in view and its adoption well understood. That purpose was to confer the status of citizenship upon a numerous class of persons domiciled within the limits of the United States, who could not be brought within the operation of the naturalization laws because native-born, and whose birth, though native, had at the same time left them without the status of citizenship. These persons were not white persons, but were in the main persons of African descent who had been held in slavery in this country, or, if having themselves never been held in slavery, were the native-born descendants of slaves. Prior to the adoption of the 14th Amendment, it was settled that neither slaves nor those who had been such, nor the descendants of these, though native and freeborn, were capable of becoming citizens of the United States, which comes from the Dred Scott versus Sanford case. The 13th Amendment, though conferring the boon, which means benefit, of freedom upon native-born persons of African blood, had left them under an insuperable, which means unable to be overcome, bar as to citizenship. And it was mainly to remedy this condition that the 14th Amendment was adopted. So essentially, in the most simple way of saying it, white people aren't U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens are released slaves after the Civil War, and they're of African blood or African descent. So people are all walking around saying that they're U.S. citizens when they most certainly are not. And actually, you're about 1 millimeter away from being a felon when you do that. 18 U.S.C. 911, whoever falsely and willfully represents himself to be a citizen of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. And this is the single word that prevents everyone from being felons, is the word willfully, because people don't know what they're doing. If more people were aware of the situation and they go around calling themselves a U.S. citizen, they would be a felon. And if they were prosecuted, they'd be going to jail for up to 3 years.
Okay, now, but the sham upon which our current control matrix is based has us believing that we are citizens and self-identifying accordingly. So it seems to work to the benefit of the sham to have us misrepresenting ourselves as citizens.
Yeah, the whole point of the entire American system is that everything has to be contractual and everything has to be voluntary. So the beauty of our country is that it's not a fascist country or something like that. It's actually what it is it's basically the occult. Our country is basically an occult-based political system, meaning that the word occult means hidden, right?
Yep.
So the beauty of the interesting thing about our system is that everything is hidden, but yet everything is completely open at the same time, meaning you can go out and find all this information. Anyone can. It's actually very accessible, especially today with AI and computers and everything else. You know, if you wanted to go and learn about this 25 years ago, you would probably have to go to some local law library, and it would definitely be more difficult. Nowadays, it's terrifically easy to find a lot of this information. So I think that's kind of why we're having the renaissance that we're having in this area, or partially the reason why. But yeah, the whole system is based on getting you to volunteer, getting you to volunteer into the tax system, getting you to volunteer to become a part of the bar. The bar is actually just an optional private organization as well. Getting you to willingly contract into the United States as a citizen. That's why they ask you, are you a US citizen all the time? They're asking you all the time because they can't make you one. They can only kind of offer it to you and have you give it to yourself.
Okay, there's so much I want to go into in this, and I know that you have your own country,
Yeah.
the Amnesty Coalition, is that correct?
Yeah.
So admittedly, I'm quite new to this, but it seems that when we're just talking about filling out forms, to say that I'm not a US citizen then leads to a bunch of opaque complications.
Surprisingly, no, I thought the same thing. Surprisingly, no, most of the time it makes absolutely no difference, which is actually kind of funny.
Okay. So sticking with the Fourth Amendment for a bit, it feels like this was the origin of going from like a conglomerate of states, each with their own state rules, into this notion of like a federal system, and then this kind of like ghost overlay taking over quote unquote law. Can you expound upon that? Break it down for us?
We still have both systems. We still have both systems. So the federal system is, so if we go to 4 USC 71, we can see that more permanent seat of government. All that part of the territory of the United States included within the present limits of the District of Columbia shall be the permanent seat of government of the United States. And then we have UCC 9-307, which covers it even more simply. H, the location of United States. The United States is located in the District of Columbia. So when people say United States, or when you hear about the United States Code, or when you hear about the United States, where is the United States? And you can see that really well here. I recently had a case that was removed from state court to federal court. And this definition of state court in here is actually a perfect definition that describes what the United States is. It includes the Superior Court of the District of Columbia, a court of a United States territory or insular possession, and a tribal court. So, United States, the legal definition of the term United States is the District of Columbia. But the District of Columbia has these, like, basically possessions. They aren't sovereign nations in themselves, they're more like owned property, right? So if you go to US territories, the United States has five major territories: American Samoa, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, and the US Virgin Islands, right? And when you start digging into this more and more, you start to realize the when they say United States, these are the states they're talking about. They're talking about these states and the District of Columbia. There's also nine uninhabited possessions or insular possessions or U.S. territories, islands like, you know, Midway Island, Atoll, these kind of different places. But they don't have anybody on them, so I don't typically talk about them too much. But this, when they say United States, you can look it up over and over and over again. HCFR 215.8. No, let me look this up real quick. HCFR 215 dot, maybe it's dot one. Let me just take one second here. Eight
Whatever
USC.
you just pulled up by mistake is like already dysregulating my nervous system. The biometric
Oh.
identifiers, not into that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can find all sorts of. I found I randomly stumbled across one that was reporting for reporting requirements for weather modification. Did you ever see that one?
No.
Yeah, I can show you that one too. Let me just I just stumbled across these sometimes, and it's pretty shocking. I don't know if I can find the weather modification one rapidly, but let me just see if I can for you.
I had Mitch, the orgone donor, on just after the LA fires broke out to talk about all the weather mod stuff happening.
Yeah.
Thoroughly creepy.
Let me see here. Here it is. 15 USC 9A. 15 USC 9A.
Whoa. When was that written, that code?
You would have to go into like the definition section and then go to the bottom. 1971.
71. Wow. But you're a conspiracy theorist if you talk about weather modification.
Well, what's the definition? What the government gives you a definition. There it is right there.
Amazing.
8 CFR 215.1 is the one I was looking for. 8 CFR 215.1. All right. So if you look here, you can see United States means, and then they say the several states, but they never clarify which ones. That's kind of like the way they write this to confuse you, right?
Yep.
The several states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Swains Island, the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands, and any territory or waters, continental and insular, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States,
That's
right?
so vague. So they use themselves to define themselves so you can't know what it means.
Yeah, and then the term continental United States means the District of Columbia and the several states. But the thing is that when people read this several states,
Right, what does that mean?
they think that it means the 50 or 48 states of the Union. It doesn't. It actually means all these other places like Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Swains Island, Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Island. And you can see that again here, the term geographical part of the United States means the continental United States, and then they name Alaska and Hawaii as something completely separate. And then Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Swains Islands. So really, if you were to read this in English, this would re the way this would read would be the District of Columbia, Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Swains Island, the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands beginning November 28th, 2009. If you read it that way, that would be the correct answer to the term geographical part of the United States.
So as a woman living in New Mexico, I do not live in the United States.
That's correct. You live in a country called New Mexico.
Okay.
It's like Europe. It's the same layout as Europe. It's just that nobody knows it. In Europe, they know it. Here, they don't. Alaska and Hawaii are not sovereign nations. And you can literally just type this into Google: is the state of New Mexico under the exclusive jurisdiction of the national government? No.
Now, do cops know this? Do civil servants know this? Do judges know this?
Well, the way that it works is you're a US citizen. So if you say you're a US citizen, that means you're not in New Mexico. That means you're in the District of Columbia, Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Swains Island, or the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, right? And it's based off of allegiance. So you've sworn, when you say you're a U.S. citizen, you've essentially sworn your allegiance to one of these areas, right? Not New
Okay.
Mexico, right?
Right.
So when you go to voter registration in California, you'll see that terminology is absolutely perfect. The only way that you can vote is you have to be a U.S. citizen. You can see all the choices involved being a U.S.
Are you
citizen,
a
right?
resident of California?
So that's the thing. So the term resident means temporarily staying in a foreign land that is not actually where you live for some sort of recreational or business related purposes. And we can get into that more if you want. I would just need to stop sharing my screen for just a moment and then pull up Z Dictionary. And we can go back to screen share. And then I have to go to the word domicile. And I can show you the difference between the word domicile and the word resident, right? And then it'll make perfect sense as to what they're actually saying, right? So if we go to domicile and then we go down to domicile and residence, however, are frequently distinguished in that domicile is the home, the fixed place of habitation, while residence is a transient place of dwelling, right? So what they're actually asking you in this, I am one of the following. A U.S. citizen, which would be somebody who is located in, living in, and has allegiance to the District of Columbia, Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Swains Islands, or the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands beginning November 28th, 2009, but they are currently not in their own country. And they
Okay.
are actually in a completely foreign country as essentially a visitor that does not actually live there at all, called California.
Okay.
That's what this sentence is saying. If it was actually California, it would say, it is a citizen of California and domiciled in California.
Okay. So now I know you wouldn't fill out a voter registration, but if you were, what would you check?
If I check any of these boxes, I'm going to prison.
In that case, voter registration is not even an option for someone who's not a resident of Guam, Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, et cetera, et
District of
cetera.
Columbia, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I would be going to prison for up to 3 years.
And so is the reason why, like before elections, they're like, make sure you register to vote to hook people into this scam?
Correct. Because once you do this, once you fill out voter registration, you're naturalizing. And that's what they're basically, if you were to boil down a lot of the propaganda that you see everywhere, you wonder, man, why do they spend so much money trying to get us to vote? Obviously, you think to yourself, that there's no area in all of life where the government is pushing something in order to try to really help too much. It's usually something kind of nefarious, right?
Right.
So you start thinking, they're pushing this voting thing pretty hard. It must be something behind it, right?
Right.
Well, there is. And the answer comes from 8 USC 1101 subsection A23. The term naturalization means the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. This is what they're trying to get
Coercion,
you to do.
manipulation. How does that serve them?
Well, like I said, they can't do anything to you unless you voluntarily contract into the system. If
Okay.
you don't voluntarily contract, now again, what is a U.S. citizen? Released slave after the Civil War of African descent. So when you naturalize into the District of Columbia and its U.S. territories and insular possessions, you're effectively getting rid of being an American. You're getting rid of your rights. You're getting rid of your constitutional rights, your Bill of Rights, your state constitution's gone. You're basically burning everything to the ground, and you're basically telling them that you are a released slave after the Civil War of African blood.
So then you're committing perjury.
Well, not quite, because you aren't willful. If you're willful about it, then yes, it would be up to 3 years in prison. That's in accordance with 18 USC 911. But like I said, the one word that's the saving grace for most people is this word willfully. So I always say on these shows, you know, after you listen to this show, if you look these things up for yourself and realize the situation and you continue to say that you are a U.S. citizen, then you would be violating 18 USC 911. Like, for example, if I filled out a W-9 form, I'd be going to prison. If I paid taxes, I'd be going to prison. If I tried to get a driver's license, I'd be going to prison. If I tried to sign up to vote, I'd be going to prison. So, yeah.
So do you fill out a W-8 instead of a W-9? And do you consider yourself a non-resident alien?
I would fill out a W-8-BEN if I was going to be getting a job. Yes. And then do I consider myself a non-resident alien? I don't know about that much anymore. I would just fill it out that I'm just in a different country, basically.
And that's where you put in Amnesty Coalition?
Yeah.
And do people ever question you on that? Ever push back?
I don't have any sort of employment. So, and it's kind of hit or miss on this one. You just never know. A lot of large organizations, they have it to where like you can just log in and file whatever you want and it just gets processed instantly and there's not even anybody looking at it. Smaller organizations, sometimes they get really excited about this once they learn what it is. They've never seen one before. Once they learn what it is, because it stops the business from having to match the taxes of the employee, so the business saves money as well. But then there's always the Janices or whatever you want to call it, the tax Nazis who freak out, who don't know absolutely anything about anything, and they can't name any law or code or anything about literally anything. They don't even know the definition of the word tax. But yet they're very, very adamant about the fact that this form cannot be used and they make it very difficult on you. So,
right. Now, I watched your recent show with Andy Kaufman and I know you're doing a lot of litigation right now. So when you're in court, are judges hip to this? Are they challenging you? I don't even know if these types of details are coming up. But it seems like you know more about this than I'm guessing people in these higher positions do.
Yeah. So most of my cases just get dismissed for almost no reason. And then I wind up going to appeals and almost all of my cases are just in appeals currently. So, yeah, I don't know. I just had a show with a clerk of court. His name is Alex. I asked him, I said, what is it? Why am I experiencing this? And he told me that, you know, when he went to law school, the most difficult section in all of law school was the commercial code classes, right? And he said those classes are nightmares and basically nobody knows anything about the commercial code or how to read it. So when you bring it up, they kind of pish-posh it because it hits their ego really, really hard because they, like, if you think nobody understands any of this stuff, when you start getting into the commercial code, it's 1,000 times worse. That for sure no one knows anything about. The most occulty part of the occult is the commerce code.
Okay.
And that's what I specialize in. So that's literally my specialty is the commerce code. So that makes for an interesting, it has made for, and will probably continue to make for a very interesting conversation.
So are your cases being dismissed because they don't know what you're talking about?
I can't even get them to tell me why. So right. I don't know.
All right. So backing up a little bit, I just want to stick with the 14th Amendment because I know it's really important to you. And I know it's, you know, high up on your list of missions. Is it true that that was never actually ratified?
According to Congress, yeah. So that's a whole nother rabbit hole in terms of this. So we say the 14th Amendment, right? The 14th Amendment just is what birthed the U.S. citizen category. So if there was no 14th Amendment, there'd be no U.S. citizen, right? It wouldn't exist, right?
And so then we would just be state, what, nationals?
State citizens.
State citizens. Okay.
State citizens or state nationals. Nationality and citizenship are two totally different subjects.
Okay.
The term nationality can basically just mean that you've pledged allegiance to some place or some idea. And then the term citizenship means that you're subjecting yourself to. So if you are a national of, let's say, for example, New Mexico, that does not necessarily mean that you've subjected yourself to New Mexico, right? And you would have to be a national in order to be a citizen, right? So there's two different layers, and you can have nationality without citizenship. But I don't believe you'd be able to have citizenship without nationality. I think
Okay.
that's sort of like the second layer that you have to have the first layer first, right? So on my nation's website, as well as my law firm's website, in the questions and answers page, if you scroll all the way down, there's this congressional record where Congress is telling you, and they go on for about 7 pages, the 14th Amendment, equal protection law or tool of usurpation, right? And this is basically Congress just talking about how the 14th Amendment was never legally ratified and why. And they give all the different information. Here's a full breakdown. Texas rejected the 14th Amendment on October 27th, 1866. Georgia rejected the 14th Amendment on no November 9th, 1866. And then it has a little source material. And they go back and forth and back and forth, and they talk about all this stuff. And basically, if you were to use this in a court of law or something like that, then this is essentially saying that the US citizen category doesn't even exist. So even though, yes, I'm white, which would automatically mean I'm not a US citizen, I'm not the descendants of slaves, nor am I currently in slavery or being released from slavery. So that would also eliminate the idea that I'm a US citizen. But even beyond that, this document would show that the US citizen category doesn't even exist, right? So what does that mean? That means that someone cannot subject themselves to the District of Columbia and its U.S. territories and insular possessions, right? And pretty much all of federal codes are all based off of, well, they're all based off of pretty much that area. The U.S. code is literally the United States code, meaning the legal definition of the word United States. So the thing is that basically, if the 14th Amendment isn't really real, and if it was never really ratified, then Federal Reserve notes, which is what's in your wallet, would cease to exist. The FBI would cease to exist. The CIA would cease to exist. The District of Columbia would essentially cease to exist. The United States Code would cease to exist. The United States citizen category would cease to exist. The passport office would instantaneously evaporate, the Department of State. We just go back to kind of what you saw in 1850 in America, where you have, you have the county recorder and you have the sheriff's office. You wouldn't even have the police anymore if the U.S. citizen category was eliminated. The police is on the District of Columbia and the U.S. territories and insular possessions side of the coin. The sheriff is the original actual state law enforcement. So you'd still have the sheriff's office, and then you would have the county recorder's office, and that's about all you'd have left, and the courts. And that's a much simpler system, very similar to what you see in the Wild West movies. That's basically what we'd have if the 14th Amendment was acknowledged to be fraudulent and having never been properly ratified.
What was the upshot of this congressional conversation that you've cited here? Like what came of this conversation?
Obviously nothing, because here we are.
Do you see a version of reality where this myth is busted open in our lifetime and this false system collapses?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, the whole basis of my entire nation is to get the 14th Amendment recognized as having never been ratified in the first place, fraudulent. So, like, you wouldn't use the word repeal because it was never actually ratified. So, I'm not trying to repeal the 14th Amendment. I'm trying to just have it acknowledged as it's never been here. It never was here. It's never been here. So.
Is anyone else are there any like Ron Pauls or Thomas Masseys who are talking about this or acknowledging this?
No, not even in the slightest. No, the whole all of Congress would be gone if the 14th Amendment was repealed. There would be no Congress.
And have you or any of your students brought this to court?
Not yet, not to my knowledge. This would be something you'd use for more of like a criminal defense, I guess, maybe. But I don't know of anyone that's used it. There was a guy recently who has nothing to do with anything that I'm doing, who used some sort of a defense stating that he's like a stateless person and he has no citizenship anywhere, and he like won the case. I saw some press releases on that, but no, he's not one of my people. I could tell right away. So I don't know. I don't know what everyone is doing. I mean, I probably have, hundreds of thousands of people doing this, so I don't know what everyone is doing. I try to keep my finger on the pulse of a lot of it as best I can, but no, I don't think so.
Now, I don't know where you were at with this during the COVID lockdowns, but I know in California you guys had certain mandates. Were you able to use this differentiation around the language of citizenship to evade some of the tyrannical mandates?
I didn't get into any of this until 2022, until I was, and so by then it had kind of cooled off. So I didn't really get an opportunity to use this during that time period, really.
And let's say, and I just want to preface this with a clear cancel delete. I'm not living into this reality, but if they start pulling some sort of digital ID nonsense, would people be able to use these differentiations around citizenship to get out of some of those slavier requirements?
Nothing applies unless you're a citizen, and that includes drafts. That includes war drafts. So, war drafts don't apply. Taxes don't apply. Driver's licenses don't apply. I mean, you name it. None of it has anything to do with anything. You have to be a citizen of the United States, which means a citizen of the District of Columbia, its U.S. territories and insular possessions, in order to be involved in any of that. So yeah, it's actually very simple.
So, have you dealt with any law enforcement? I know you don't use a driver's license. So, have you ever been pulled over and then not provided the identification that they're asking for?
I haven't personally, I use diplomatic plates on my car, so everyone leaves me alone. I don't even get parking tickets. But if you, we have a lot of people in our group, obviously, and some people have had issues and some people have not. But an even better answer to that question is we have a lot of cops that are even involved in my platform. So it
That
kind of
says a
goes,
lot.
yeah. So, I actually have an officer who's coming on my show here very, very shortly. Practicing, he's been an active officer for I think decades. I think he's like a 25 plus years in the force. So he's coming on the show, hopefully pretty soon. We're actually scheduling that right now. So, but you'd be surprised how many officers also know that something is wrong with this country.
Really?
Yeah.
And what makes you say that?
I've just talked to several of them and I've seen a lot of things, seen a lot of comments, and yeah, I think people would be more surprised than they are. And then the ones that aren't, it's okay. We just sue them. It's not a big deal. You know what I mean?
The diplomatic plates, is that because of your 5-star passport?
No, it's based off of the fact that, I have my own nation and then I'm essentially a guest of that nation in this country. There's a lot of confusion because people think that California is in the United States, which it's not. So the thing is that I use the whole diplomatic thing and diplomatic arm, and I have these brand new diplomatic identification cards, which we're just getting. We're just wrapping up the last version of these. We're going to start getting these out to people. And the whole point is just to kind of because the police think that they're basically inside of the District of Columbia or a U.S. territory or insular possession. And that's basically the confusion because they're not. So we use the diplomatic plates and the diplomatic identification to sort of get away from that confusion. Because the thing is, the police aren't really supposed to be in places like California and New Mexico. They're only supposed to have the sheriff's office in places like California or New Mexico. What happens is that when the cities incorporate, the police are born through that activity of a city incorporating, right? So the city becomes basically a federal enclave, and it operates as though it's part of the District of Columbia, and that's why we have police on the streets. If it wasn't like that, then there would only be the sheriffs would be the only law enforcement officers in the states, in the 48 states of the union.
So, how do you get diplomatic plates?
We make them ourselves. We go out and we get, you'll see in video number 5 or 6 of the free course, we go and get a what's called a foreign private motor carrier DOT number from the Department of Transportation, and it's free. It's completely free. You can get it online. It's a long application process. It's probably going to take you about 45 minutes to an hour to do all the application process, but it's free. They'll give you the number right away for free, and then you just take that number, and then we have our own website for the guy that prints the plates for us. He's actually part of our group. You type that number into the website, and then he'll print your plates for you and send it out to you with your number, with the foreign private motor carrier number on it, which is
And
a
no one
number.
messes with you?
No. It's a number that's given to foreign trusts and stuff like that that are operating in the United States, which technically would only include the District of Columbia and its U.S. territories and insular possession. That's kind of like the big confusion. People think that they need driver's licenses and they need plates and all these different things. That would be true if you were in the District of Columbia or any of its U.S. territories or insular possessions, right? So basically, the way it works is if you go on Dun and Bradstreet and you look up State of California, you know, or if you go on Google and type in how many constitutions are there for State of California, it'll say there's two different constitutions I can show you, right? How many constitutions, or we can do it for New Mexico. How many constitutions are there for New Mexico? Let's see. It doesn't give me an easy answer.
I think if you scroll up, there was a how many constitutions does, oh no, it's Mexico, not New Mexico.
Or New Mexico states. Anyways, how many constitutions are there? California. Two constitutions, one in 1849 and then one in 1879, right? One state has one constitution. You don't have two constitutions for one state. So what this means is there's two different Californias, okay?
Right.
So there's one after the 14th Amendment and there's one before the 14th Amendment, which makes perfect sense, right? Because after the 14th Amendment is where all the goofiness is, right? So instead of that, they could never get rid of the original California. So what do? They just created another California, and then now they can control that very easily. And they created it under the 14th Amendment type situation, right? So what you have to realize is, if you go to Dun and Bradstreet and you look up the location of this 1879 version of State of California, you'll see that it's listed as a business. All right. So you ask yourself, so okay, how does that work, right? And we have to go down to where it says California. Here it is. We'll go to Dun and Bradstreet. We'll see here that State of California is listed as a business. Okay. That's probably pretty shocking for most people. Now what we need to do is we need to figure out where is that business located, right? We're going to find it right now.
Wow, and they name Newsom as the key principal, even.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he runs a business, and that
Right.
business is called State of California, right? So if we go to this is the address for State of California. And you'll notice it's for people who work, it's a government zone, right?
Yep.
So everyone running around saying that they're in state of California, if they don't specify which one they're talking about, they're going to assume they're in this one. This one is a federal enclave that operates as though it's in the District of Columbia. And you can see that under 4 USC 72. All offices attached to the seat of government shall be exercised in the District of Columbia and not elsewhere, except as otherwise expressly provided by law. So the reason why you have license plates is they're basically license plates for government employees. So if you have a license plate on your car that says California on it, we can go down that long, crazy rabbit hole as to how all that all works. But basically, you're driving around in a car that you donated to the government, and you're basically allowed to use it for commercial purposes, and then you are entitled to the profits of that activity, right? And you can see that on a certificate of title. If we go to the word certificate, actually means like evidence that an event took place or something like that. So the definition, if you were to put it in English, the definition of the word title means evidence that something exists someplace else. The definition of certificate, right?
Okay.
So this in English, it's, you know, this is a document that is evidence that there's a title someplace else. And you ask yourself, well, where's the actual title then? The actual title is called the Manufacturer's Certificate of Origin. And this is the actual title of the car, right? See, they'll tell you right on the DMV website, when you buy a brand new car, you have to send this in order to get a certificate of title, which is absolutely correct. So this is the actual title of the vehicle. And when you first buy a car, you have to send this in to the DMV with all the documentation. And then what do they give you in exchange? They give you the certificate of title. And then they list you as the registered owner. If you look up the definition of registered owner in Black's Law,
Ew.
owner whose name is recorded in a security issuer's registers as the securities owner and is entitled to receive dividend or interest and principal payouts. So what does that mean in English? It means that you're allowed to you're basically converting the car into a what's called a motor vehicle. That's why it's called the Department of Motor Vehicles, which if you start going down that rabbit hole, a motor vehicle is a vehicle that's being used to transport persons or property for some sort of fee, rate, charge, or other consideration. So it means to use it commercially, right?
Got
So
it.
you're giving them the actual title. They're giving you an abstract called a certificate of title, which means proof that there's a title someplace else. They're the ones now holding the actual title. And then in exchange, they're putting your name in all capital letters as the registered owner, which means that you have the rights to the profits associated with using that motor vehicle commercially.
So, like, I'm the Uber driver for my own car that I just gave the government.
Precisely.
Got it. Do
And
you know?
it's all based off of naturalization. So that California plate that you have on your car is not referring to the landmass known as California. It's referring only and exclusively to the area called State of California, which is this area here.
So we voluntarily rope ourselves into this commercial contract without even knowing it.
That's correct.
Do you need to obtain the original title from the car's manufacturer to get the diplomatic plates?
No. I have people send in their certificate of titles to have them destroyed. And you can always just write up like a quit claim deed or a bill of sale, and then just never take it to the DMV. You know, you can write up a quit claim deed or a bill of sale, placing, you know, just saying like, I, Brandon Joe Williams, hereby sell blah, blah, blah car. And you can put all the same information from the title on the bill of sale. And you can almost kind of like make your own little manufacturer certificate of origin. You can even list things that may have been modified on the car in the bill of sale, and then just say in the bill of sale that you're selling the car into a trust or something like that, or to a trust, because a trust is considered a person in law. And then that new bill of sale basically becomes the new title of the vehicle. And then you can actually either go down to the county registrar, and you can actually record that new bill of sale on the record if you want. You really don't even have to. You can just keep it privately, and then if there's ever a problem, you can bring it up later. Because it's still totally active and totally legal, even if you'd never recorded it at the county recorder. So it makes no difference. But if you wanted there to be a public record of the fact that this bill of sale, which essentially is almost like a little title, was created, then you would just go down to the county recorder and you would just pay the $5 fee and then get it recorded. And then you'd get a record number. And then anyone who wants to know anything about the vehicle or any police officers, you would refer them to that record number at the county recorder.
Has that ever come up for you?
No, I've never been. I don't get bothered by police at all. They don't really. You know, there's a certain point with all of this where you start to understand this so well, and you start to understand their mentality so well, and you know, they're even in my groups and stuff. It's just not, it becomes sort of like a spiritual thing. I could fly past an officer at, you know, twice the speed limit, and he probably wouldn't even bother me. I don't know what it is. It's just a thing, you know. I'm not a madman. I have an 800 horsepower 2009 Shelby GT500, which is completely straight piped. It's loud as shit. It's got no mufflers. And then I have a completely straight piped 2023 Triumph Speed Triple 1200 RS. So both of my vehicles are extremely fast and extremely loud. I'm probably going 15 to 20 miles over the speed limit pretty much at all times, minimum. And then I use the carpool lane by myself constantly, all the time. So, you know, besides sticking a handgun out the window and shooting it off, or besides like crazy erratic driving, like switching lanes like a madman and
That does it for the first half of today's conversation with Brandon Joe Williams. As you are inspired to scope out the second half of today's extra very juicy conversation, which I highly, strongly, and emphatically recommend, you can find that over on both my Locals and Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and Patreon. .com/DannyKatz. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, plus that warm, fuzzy feeling that comes along with supporting she who sometimes records videos, podcasts, writes books, creates courses. Keep on keeping on. Yes, I am talking about me, your contributions. Truly mean the world and make this whole 21st century information content sharing task all the easier. So choose whichever platform feels best for you, if not both, and sign up there to grab the second half of today's conversation and all of my second half conversations. Also reminding you for the last time today to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. Also, nudging you to check out my Language of Sovereign Authority webinar, which is available for immediate registration and download on my website, dannykatz.com. The Language of Sovereign Authority is a phenomenal companion piece to Brandon Joe Williams' work, to his Contract Killer course, because it entrains us to permanently set our frequencies to unfuckwithable empowerment, sovereign agency, and inner authority with our every word. Super, super valuable tools there. So do head on over to dannykatz.com to sign up for that course immediately. And thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.